because at this particular moment the Shekhinah is there, right? Now, Nistalko Shekhinah Mimenu, but when the Shekhinah departed from Mount Sinai, Omra Torah, then the Torah says then, Bimshocha Yovel, Heimo Yalu Vahar. That when the Yovel, in other words, when there is, in this particular case, it means when the shofar is sounded, then they can go up upon the mountain. In other words, the sounding of the shofar, Rashi sort of brings in like a remiss to the end of Yom Kippur, that we blow the shofar, you know, in order to indicate, you know, that the holiness of the day is departed. And so therefore, the blowing of the shofar was a signal that the Ten Commandments having been given to the people of Israel, the Shekhinah then, you know, ascended and was no longer there. So then, you know, in that particular case, Heimo Yalu Vahar, then anybody, you know, can ascend the mountain. So, says, V'cheimo Tzinu B'Yohel Moed, and likewise we find in the Ohel Moed, the tent of meeting, if you remember, Shabbat Midbar. Shekol Zman Shunotui, as long as the Yohel Moed is spread open, in other words, as long as the tent is up, Omer Torah, then the Torah says, V'yishalku minam achne kotzurua, let them send out from the camp everyone who is afflicted with leprosy. All right, again, to explain how Rashi understands it. That particular pasuk, if you remember, comes from Parsha Nosel, beginning of Parsha Nosel. And when the people of Israel were in camp around the Ohel Moed, right? So, by tradition, there were three different camps. What are the three different camps? First of all, you had Machteh Shekhinah, the camp where the Shekhinah was. Machteh Shekhinah, this was, you know, where the Ohel Moed itself was, okay?
Is that where the Kohanim were? There?
The Kohanim, right. And, you know, that's where you had the Ark and so on and so forth, okay? Then the next one is Machteh Leviyah. In other words, the camp of the Levites, because the Levites encamped around the Ohel Moed when they wandered in the, you know, the wilderness, okay? And then after that you had Machteh Yisrael, okay? So, the Tzaruah, the person who suffered from leprosy, the Torah says that he has to be sent out, Mechutz Lamachne, he has to go out completely. In other words, not just from the Machteh Shekhinah, but also from the Machteh Leviyim, from Machteh Yisrael, because he was not, he had to leave the camp and not come in physical contact, you know, with other people, so that the leprosy should not spread, you know, from him to another person. Okay, and then the Zovim, these were people who had an unusual flow from their genital organs, which means, you know, that they're suffering some sort of a venereal disease, gonorrhea, something like that. So they were excluded from the Machteh Shekhinah and the Machteh Leviyah, but they could be in Machteh Yisrael, okay? And then a person who had come in contact with a mess, so he was excluded from the Machteh Shekhinah, but he could be in the Machteh Leviyah and so on. So, you know, dependent upon what degree of impurity he had contracted, what degree of tumors, we would say, you know, as to where he had to be sent away, okay? But this was in accordance with what? As long as the Yohel Moed was there, then the law of, you know, sending away from the various machtas, this applied. Hugalu ha-parochas, however, once the parochas, you know, the curtain that separated the holiest part of the Ohel Moed, you know, from the not-so-holy part of the Ohel Moed, once that was rolled up, Hugalu, of course, you recognize the word like what?
Glila,
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, hutru zovin v'ham sorim likonisham. Then, at that point, people who were suffering from this gonorrhea and people who were suffering from leprosy, they could come there. I mean, in other words, there was no longer any sanctity over there. So, what does all this prove? It proves what? That a place by itself doesn't have any special honor that it confers, because that's only temporary. But what the person is It's the person who brings honor to the place that he is, because he is who he is. Okay.
If there's no permanent honor, how come the Temple Mount is treated differently?
Well, you ask a very good question. It's a question which, of course, is still being debated, you know, by scholars. We feel, you know, that we have to preserve that, even though the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, but the Kedusha that was there and the, you know, and the Har HaBayis still exists. Okay,
but that's contradictory that to what we're saying here.
Well, but wait a minute.
Okay.
Mount Sinai was never a permanent place. It was only during the time that the giving of the Ten Commandments that it was sanctified. Mm-hmm. After that, it wasn't particularly sanctified. Okay?
Yeah.
The Ohel Moed, ditto. Mm. Okay? It was portable. Where it was, when it was set up, it was holy. The minute that it moved on, so the place no longer had any intrinsic Kedusha. But the Har HaBayis has intrinsic Kedusha. That's the reason why.
You're just saying this place does, but nowhere else.
Yeah, right, so because the Har HaBayis is a special place. I mean, the Rebbeinu Shelem picked this, that this should be the place where the Beis Elohim, in other words, the eternal house of God, should be built. This is the reason why. It has a special Kedusha that the other places didn't have. They only had temporary, and this has permanent Kedusha. Pardon me? They found what? Human bones in the temple. Well, there it is. I mean, maybe it was the remains of somebody who was killed during the time when the temple was destroyed. I have no idea. Well, as I say, I don't know anything about that. I mean, so I can't say yes, I can't say no. But possibly it's the remains of something. Still, the point is that this is still a sanctified area. Problem with the Temple Mount that we have today, you know, it's become a political issue too. Precisely because they let the Arabs stay over there in 1967, so it's a thorn in our side, okay? If they had the guts in those days to throw the Arabs out of the Temple Mount when Israel had the upper hand, and this problem wouldn't be in existence today. But unfortunately, they let the Arabs stay, and as you can see, the Israeli government confirms it. I don't care whether it's the Likud government or whether it's the Labor government, but they let the Arabs not only run the place, but now they've appointed Hussein as the official guardian of the area over there. So it makes it very difficult.
Who appointed Hussein?
Who appointed Hussein?
Arafat?
No. Arafat disputes it. Arafat wants it to be his, right?
King Hussein. I thought you meant Faisal Hussein. Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
King Hussein, sure.
King Hussein, King Hussein.
Well, he was the Sharif of Mecca. His family.
His family goes back, right? Supposedly, he's a descendant of Muhammad or something like that. So, you know, he has a special yichus along those lines. And of course, as you know, I mean, the Saudis they deposed his family, and so that's why they gave the family, the Hashim family, they gave them Iraq, and they gave them. You know, they carved out this place that they called the Transjordan.
Right.
I mean, it was part of Palestine. They took it away, the British, and they gave him such thick a land, you know, that he could say he's a king of. And likewise, as I say, the other member of the family, they gave him Iraq.
Right, true.
Right. And then, of course, you know, in Iraq, you had this revolution, and they deposed him, they killed the thing, so that...
My friends, the British did all this wonderful things for us.
They did it, and they were helped by the French. Yeah. Unfortunately. How long is what? The Dome of the Rock? It goes back roughly
600.
I would say 600. I don't know.
Yeah, it was one generation after. Well, it was one generation after.
What,
Omar,
after the Mohammedan conquest?
Muhammad and Omar is his son-in-law.
Right.
So that brings you up.
Yeah,
maybe
roughly
about
650 or something like that.
Then it was one, I forget the name, but it was one generation or half generation after that.
Yeah.
I don't remember the name of that colleague. So say about 670 maybe.
Yes. Okay. Close enough. Yeah. That they put it up.
Didn't look like though now particularly because the dome was different. Originally it wasn't.
Some also say that there was a church over there too that you know had been established by the Byzantines, you know.
Yeah.
Prior to the Mohammedan conquest.
That's for sure. And also the Dome of the Rock. I get this from reading this book. I'm no expert.
Yeah.
The Dome of the Rock actually in its although it was absolutely created by Arabic artisans and architects, and they took a lot of their architecture from the
Byzantines. Yeah.
Well, the Basilica of the Church of the Sepulchre.
Yeah.
It's somewhat of the same lines, not precisely. Anyway.
Is that at all?
No. It's in Israel. Yeah, the Holy Sepulchre is also, in the old city of Jerusalem. The Jews should reestablish their right to the Har HaBayis.
Right.
They felt it. And, the Israeli government has stations police, soldiers over there in order to make sure that Jews don't go up on the Temple Mount. So,
Jews aren't allowed up there because it's in the space, right?
Correct. But even if Jews wanted to go up,
that's
over
practicing
there.
Other opinions
right.
It's allowable.
There are those who say that the present area which is covered up on the top is not necessarily what was all of it holy in the in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. That there were areas over there that were not. I mean, after all, the Har HaBayis covered a lot of territory.
Right.
If you ever saw the reconstruction. Mm-hmm. Of what it looked like back in the days of the Second Temple, that they have at the Holy Land Hotel over there. So you realize that in addition to the Beis HaMikdash, which was the focal point, but you had apartment buildings, palaces, forts, and so on. So not everything was necessarily of the same sanctity. So, there were those who felt that we ought to reestablish our claim and at least take that area which may not have been part of the Beis HaMikdash precinct and, show that we can build a shul up there and go up to daven over there.
You still think that?
Yeah, well, right now, there's a group, that calls themselves the Ne'emone Har HaBayis.
Renachon, the temple faithful.
Those who are faithful to the Har HaBayis.
Yeah, they even have, the Hoshin Mishpat and the Eifal.
Right, I mean, they've recreated, these different things, the Kalim, the things Kalim. That, the vestments of the Kohen Gadol and the Kohanim and so on and so forth. Yeah.
Tell me, if they ever rebuild the temple again, will they resume the sacrifices?
Well, this is the idea, that they would. Sure. Look, even Maimonides, who felt that the whole idea of sacrifices was a concession to the people of Moshe Rabbeinu's age, because everybody did it so that it should be sacrificed to God, not to anything else. But because the Torah says that this is, you have to bring keves achol baboker and keves achol beinu abayim and so on, so that this has to be done, and the new temple will have again the sacrifices.
That means the people who are not at the temple wouldn't have to daven now
because
I thought the davening takes the place of the sacrifices.
No. Davening is in addition to sacrifice.
Can't get away from it.
No rest, no rest.
Okay. No, even in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, people were davening in the synagogues that have been established, of course.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Sure.
Not to replace it, it's...
Maybe not the same davening we have today, but they had...
The Shmash, Benesma, this goes back over to Yom Shekhnesses HaGdola. Yeah. Well, we learned the Gemara Brachos.
That's right.
So maybe they didn't have all the piyutim, we have today. That they didn't have. Okay. But they certainly had, the basic elements of the davening.
Sure. This is actually right. This is established 500 years before.
Yeah. Okay.
Onward.
So,
Weiter.
Onward.
Right.
Sahal. Weiter. What is Weiter? I've always found it.
Further. Let's go on further.
Weiter.
Okay.
Yiddish.
Yeah, listen, you learn.
Well,
I learn.
All right.
So at any rate, getting back again to this discussion now between Rabbi Nachman by Yitzchok and Nachman, the Rav Chista, right? So first he invited Rav Nachman Bar Chista invited Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok to come and stay in his place, right? So now he says, Omalei, so he said to him, Ihochi, if this is the case, Nekum Ano Legabimar, listen, then why don't I come and join you where you are? So Omalei, so he said to him, no, because Mutav Yovei Mone Ben Pras, Esel Mone Ben Mone. Yovei Mone Ben Mone, Esel Mone Ben Pras. Okay? Which means, you actually have much greater yichus than I have. In what way? Because Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chista, his father was Rav Chista, also one of the great Talmudic scholars, okay? Whereas Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, his father was not a great Talmudic scholar. So in other words, who had the greater yichus? It was the Mone ben Mone. In other words, the one who was worth the 100 shekel piece, right, who is the son of another 100 shekel piece, is worth more than Mone ben Pras. You know, 100 shekel piece as compared to only the son of a 50 shekel piece, okay? So in other words, you have greater yichus than I have. So it's better that Mone ben Pras should come, in other words, someone like me should come to you rather than that you should come to me, okay?
How do you know which Rabbanim are talking about? I can't see.
Because the names are start on the top over there, okay?
Oh,
okay.
Rab Nachman,
right.
And then
Rab Nachman by Yitzchak, right? And then Rab Chista, okay?
Oh, okay, fine, fine, fine.
Yeah. All right. Another story. Besura havas devarta b'shivusi de Rav. In Surah, which was where Rav lived, so there was Deborah, there was a pestilence in the neighborhood of Rav, right? Excuse me, I have to read it a little differently. Besura havas devarta, right? There was in Surah a pestilence, but b'shivusi de Rav, in Rav's neighborhood, however, lo havas devarta, right? Where Rav lived, there was no pestilence. So savru mine, so they were of the opinion that mishum zakusei de Rav, the nofish. It was because of the great zakuyos, so the great merit that Rav, this was the reason why in his own immediate neighborhood, there was no pestilence, right? And so they had a dream that night. That is, these people, you know, who were of the opinion, you know, that this was the reason why in Rav's neighborhood there was no pestilence. They had a dream, and what did they see in the dream? Rav appeared unto them, the nefishes of Chusik Tuvo, who had great merit. So the dream told them, you know, this is only a minor thing as far as he's concerned. In other words, this little the fact that he could keep pestilence out of his own neighborhood, this is a minor thing. For this, they don't need Rav. Okay? Milsa Zutrele the Rav. In other words, well, let's look for another reason why in Rav's neighborhood there wasn't any. Ela mishumahu gavra the shayel moriz avilo likmura. But the reason why there was none in that neighborhood is because in that neighborhood there was also someone else. And who was it? It was a certain man, Ahu Gavra, the shayel moriz avilo likmura. He would lend out a hoe and a shovel for burial purposes. In other words, whatever it was, he would give them his kalim, you know, his hoe and his shovel in order to make it right, his tools. So, in his zechus, because he was always performing mitzvahs, it was his zechus, okay, that, you know, that there was none in the neighborhood. Bidrokeres, again the same place that we mentioned before, over there, Havas Dlekesov, there was a fire. Ushivusei, the Rav Huna, Le Havas Dlekesov, but in Rav Huna's neighborhood, also he lived in that town, but over there, there was no fire. So Sovru Mino Bisusid the Rav Huna din fish. So they thought, you know, that the reason was because Rav Huna's merits were so great that this was the reason why there was no fire in his area, you know, when other parts of the town were burning. So it's Chazilahu Bechelmo. So again, there appeared unto them in a dream, Haizutralei the Rav Huna. And in the dream, they were told, no, this is too minor a thing for Rav Huna. You know, for him, greater miracle is going to happen. But look for a different reason why. Look for somebody else who's Zechuyas. Ela Mishumahi Itza, but it's rather because of a certain woman, the Mechamemes Tandura, who would heat up her oven, and she would invite all her neighbors to come in and to use her oven. So because of the fact that she was always helping other people by offering her oven, you know, for baking and so on, it was in her source that the fire was spared in their neighborhood. Omru le Rav Yehuda, that's another story. They told Rav Yehuda, also Kamse, that locusts are coming. Gozatan Nisa. So he proclaimed the fast. Omru le, so they said to him, Leikum Avsidon, says, look, they're not causing us any damage. In other words, somewhere else, you know, they've spotted the locusts. So why did he proclaim a fast? They're not doing us any harm right now. So Amaluhu, so he said to them, Zavda Isa Bahadai, tell me, are they bringing their baggage with them? In other words, what's to prevent them from making a trip over here too? Right.
You mean the locusts?
Right, the locusts. Omer le Rav Chista, then again, they said to Rav Chista this time. Excuse me. Yeah, he says, you know, there is a plague that's affecting chazirim. No, it's affecting pigs. It's killing off pigs. So goes the Tandisa. So he proclaimed a fast. So Neymar, are we to say that because of Rav Yehuda, that Rav Yehuda felt that Baka Misholachas v'minecho Misholachas b'chol haminim? Are we to say that Rav Yehuda felt that if a pestilence breaks out in one species of animal, that's going to spread automatically to other species of animals as well? I mean, they weren't aware of this business with rabies bites and so on. But, you know, the things happen, you know, that animals get dysentery and things like that. So was that what his concern was? So he says, lo, that's not it. There's something more serious. He says, shane chazire. Pigs are different from other animals, he says, the damyan ma'ayhul enosha, because their ma'ayim, their intestines, resemble the intestines of human beings. So in other words, if pigs die, and they're very close, you know, to human beings as far as parts of their anatomy is concerned, so there is a very great danger that human beings too will be afflicted with the same thing. This is why he proclaimed the fast. They said to Shmuel, there is a famine, or there's pestilence, better translate pestilence, there's a pestilence in Beit Chozoi, again, which is not in the immediate neighborhood of where Shmuel lived. So goes out to Nisa, he proclaimed the fast. So they said to him, the home Mechak, isn't it far away from us, it's at a distance from us? So Omar, so he said, Lekam Abora Hocha, the Fasiklei, tell me, is there some kind of a ford, or according to others, is there some kind of a ferry that is going to prevent them from coming? In other words, the river itself is not going to stop them. If pestilence comes, pestilence is not going to stop at the border of the river. So that therefore, even if it's at a distance from us, we have to pray that it's not going to affect them or us. Omer le Rav Nachman, Iko my son of Baradi Israel. They said to Rab Nachman, there is pestilence in the land of Israel. Gozot Hanisa, and he proclaimed the fast. Omar, and they said, Im Givira Loika, if the mistress, the Balabasta, is suffering, so Shifcha Loikosher Kains, then the maidservant certainly. And of course, Eretz Israel is the Givira in this case, right? and the Shivcha, the maidservant, is Babel. So if Eretz Israel suffers, then Babylonia certainly is going to suffer. So they say, Talmud de Gebir with Shivcha. Okay, this is a case where we said the reason is because one is the Gebir and the other one is Shivcha. How about Hosh Shivcha v'Shivcha? Lo. But are we to say that if one Shivcha and another Shivcha, in other words, let's say Babylonia and some other area, though, or one area in Babylonia and another area, not Eretz Israel, are affected. So we shouldn't proclaim. But Amrule the Shmuel, didn't they say to Shmuel, Ikom Son of Bechazar, Gozat HaNisa, that when there is pestilence in Bechazar, which is of course in Babylonia, he proclaimed the fast. So they say, Shani Hasim, it's a little different. Kevin the Ikashiyarasa, the Levi, the Asivadai. The reason is because in that particular place, Bechazar, there are caravans always going back and forth, and so therefore, if an area is affected, even though it's at a distance, people can carry this plague, this pestilence, and it'll affect us. But, you know, if they weren't, you know, for the commerce and the transactions and, the fact that people are always having, intercourse with one another, then in that particular case, if they were completely cut off, then it wouldn't be necessary. Abba Umna Habe Osile Shlom Misifter Rekia. There's a certain Abba who was an Umno, and Umno in this case, Umon means not a craftsman, but it means in this particular case that he was like a
surgeon.
Not a surgeon, I would say, but he was a bloodlet, okay? But, you know, in those days, bloodletting was considered the medical science, okay? So, Osile Shlomim Misifter Rekia. So, literally, peace came unto him from the Sifter up in the sky. In other words, he had a dream. He had, what shall we say, like a revelation or a private dream, from the heavenly academy, right, that come to him. Kol Yoma, every day. In other words, every day he received like a divine message. Okay? Well, Abaye, but Abaye, Kol Male Yoma de Shabbat. To him it happened only every Shabbos. The Rava, as far as Rava is concerned, Kol Male Yoma de Kippur Hava. It happened only Erev Yom Kippur that, he would receive this divine inspiration. Okay? So Kochal Shadati La Abaye. So Abaye felt very bad about it. Mishum, for the reason that the Abba Umna, right, the Abba, the bloodletter, right, he was getting a heavenly visitation every day, whereas Abai was only getting it every Shabbos. Shabbos. So Omer Lei, so they said to him, Lei Motzis the Mevat Ku Uvdei. But so they said to him, the reason is because by the day over here, I have to assume it means like from the heavenly body. They sent him the message. The reason is because you don't do what he does. The Mai Hava Uday, so tell me what was his deed, what did this man, what was his sechus, in other words, his merit, that he deserved to have a divine visit every day. So he says, the Abba Umno, the Hava Abba Milso, that when Abba Umno, whenever he was doing his work, in other words, his bloodletting, so Hava Machiz Gavre Lachud Benoshilchud. He always would make a separation between men and women. He would keep the men, let's say, in one room where, he did the bloodletting, and the women in another one. The Yisrael Levusha, and then also he had a garment, a special garment. The Yisbei Karno, the Havis Bezia, Kikasultai, Ki Havis, and so, and also this kind of this special garment that he had, it had corners wherein there were slits. So when he had to do bloodletting, he had his asile itza. When a woman would come, so have a malbishlor. So he would put her on the special garment, the one with the slits in it, so that he didn't have to look at her. In other words, his modesty and her modesty were preserved. And he could easily let the knife in between the slit over there. I assume that he had it positioned so that would be where the veins would be, something like that. But at the same time, he did not have to look upon.
She was wearing the garment that the.
Right, she was wearing the special garment. Right. The Yisle Duchto de Sneo, the Shadebe Peshite, the Shokel, the Yisle Shade. Let's see. Yeah. And he also had, okay, yes. And he also had, he says, a certain place, Ditsnio, which was, what shall we say? It was, you know, very
private.
The Shadidlei Pshite, the Shokel, the Islei Shadibei, the Leslei Le Mirza. It says, there people would put in, let's say, they would throw in the money, you know, to pay for his services in this special place. Where, you know, he didn't receive it directly. In other words, it was posted, let's say, outside the door or something like that, you know. So that if a person had money, he would put in money. But if a person didn't have money, then he did not have to be ashamed because, you know, nobody would see whether he gave or he didn't give. Not only that, but if he happened to heal a Talmud Chochem, then he didn't take any fee whatever from him. So, and after this guy, you know, would get up, so he would give the money to him, the Yomalim, and say to him, Zil, Bori Nafsha, go, because you are now healed. In other words, go and enjoy life, and you know, and lev agzut and lev. Okay, you should be healthy. Yom echad shel Rabbi zuga de rabbonu niftake. So one day Abaye decided to investigate him. So he sent a pair of rabbonim, in other words, a pair of, you know, talmidei chachamim, that they should investigate. So what happened? When they arrived, he had them sit down, he fed them, he gave them the drink. And then he also put, as Rashi says over there, he put under them, he gave them all kinds of woolen ornaments in order to sleep. I guess it doesn't mean ornaments, so you know, tafshite means that, but what he means is that he gave them, let's say, very soft woolen blanket, so to speak, you know, to wrap themselves around it. The tzafra, the following morning, karchinhu shaklinhu. So they, the rabbis, you know, and they wrapped it up, and they took it with them. The komu, and they arose, and they went out to the market, right? And what did they do? And the ashkechinu, and they found, you know, somebody over there, and the obulu leshaimi mar hechi shavi. Give us an estimate, they said to a person, you know, who was selling these kind of things. They said, tell me, how much is this worth? So amalei hochi vahochi. So he said, it's worth this and this amount. So Omulai, so they said to him, "Vidilma Shavatvei, maybe they're worth more than what you say." So Omulahu, Behochi Shakil, he says, "This is what you know, what people pay for it." Okay. So Omulai, Didoch Nihu, Veshakil Minoch. So they said, you know, to him. Now they come back, you know, and they say, "Look, to you know, to this Abba Umna, okay." They said to him, look, you know, we're not Ganovim, they said. It belongs to you, and we took it from you. And they said to him, Bimotusa Minoch, please, he says, B'mai Hashadatinon. He says, tell me, what did you think, what did you suspect about us, you know, when we went off the following morning, we took the bedding with us, right? It's like what people do with the hotel sometimes, you know, they take... Yeah, okay. So, tell me, what did you suspect us of doing, you know, when you saw that it was missing with us? So, Omalei, Omalehu, so he said to them, he says, Amino, I said to myself, Pidyon Shvuim Iklalu Rabbonim. Undoubtedly, the rabbis were engaged in the mitzvah of Pidyon Shvuim, that they needed money in order to redeem people had been taken captive and who needed to be ransomed. And the Achsifu Lamemali, and they were too ashamed to tell me. So Omrulei, so they said to him, Hashtu Nashkalinhu, so please take this back from us, Nashkalinhu Mar, please take it back from us, Omaluhu. So he said to them, Mehavu Shato Aschintu Midati Litzdokahavakokhavak. Okay, from the moment that, you know, I made up my mind, you know, that you had taken this for this, so I don't want it because I gave it to Tzedakah. I said, let it go to Tzedakah. And therefore, I don't want it back. Okay, I think we'll stop at this particular point. And, so we're now on Chav Beis. You want to conclude with one more sentence? All right, good. So Abba Kochal Shadati the Rava. So Rava felt bad, Mishum da Abaye, because of Abaye. So Belay Mistayat the Kol Maginis Akula Karka. So they said to him, look, your zechus is not, you know, because remember before we said that Rava received the divine inspiration only when Erev Yom Kippur, right? And so he felt bad that Abaye got it every week and didn't. So.
Not every Erev Shabbos.
Yeah, I said every week.
Okay.
Right, I meant every Shabbos. Okay, yeah. So he said, look, your zechus, it's enough already, you know, that you have enough merit in the fact that because of you, the entire city is protected. In other words, you are the shield of the entire city. So this is also, it's a great merit. So don't feel bad about it.
Okay. So
all right,
Chav Beis.
Stop at this point, right?
And it is November 2nd, 1994.
Right. Is that you protect the entire city, right? So don't poo-poo that. All right. So now we're up to Rav Broka. Okay. Rav Broka Chozoa. Chozoa means that he came probably from a place by the name of Chozoa or something like that. So Rav Broka came from Chozoa. Alva Shechich Bishuka, Devei Lefet. He liked to hang out in the marketplace in Devei Lefet. Okay? Someplace or other, wherever it is. Okay? So, at any rate, as Rashi says, Mokim, someplace. Alva Shechich Eliyahu Gabe. And, Eliyahu would like to come and meet with him. We should only have the same schutz, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Amalei, so he said unto him, Ika Bahai Shuka Bar Almadasi, tell me, is there somebody in this marketplace who is guaranteed a place in Olam Haba? Of course, that leads to a whole discussion, you know, about, we say, at whenever we say Perek, we quote actually, it's a Mishnah, the beginning of chapter 10 in Sanhedrin. And it says, you know, Kol Yisrael Shel B'chelek L'Mahaba, that all Israel has their share in the world to come. So the question is, you know, if we all have a share in the world to come, so how come he's asking Elio, is anybody over there? But the answer is that some people have an assured place and others you got to work a little bit harder for it. Why do they have an assured place? Because they have some special merit, something that they've done that already has gained them the privilege of going to Olam Haba. Okay? So Amalei, lo. So he said to him, no, there's nobody here.
Elijah told him.
Yeah, that's what Elijah said to him. Yeah, he asked Elijah, and Elijah said, no, there's nobody there. Okay? Ad hochi be hochi. So in the meantime, you know, while they were still schmoozing, Chozelahu Gavro the Havasim is son of Uchme Velerum Chutu de Chelto Biglime. He saw a certain man who was wearing black shoes. Why black shoes? Vesach Nochnish, but anyway, he was wearing black shoes, okay? We'll find out why, by the way, okay? To us, I mean, black shoes is for formal occasions, but he was wearing black shoes not because it's formal, but for a different reason, as we'll discover very soon. All right. Well, not only that, but there was no thread of tchelis. In other words, he wasn't wearing any tzitzis on his cloak. So Amalei. So of course, Rav Broka said to Eliyahu, "Hi, Bar Almadasihu." this man is going to Elam Haba? You know, he's not dressed like a Jew. Jews should wear tzitzis, and he's running around without tzitzis. So Rahat Basrei, and he ran after him. Omalei, and he said to him, as he said to Eliyahu, he said to this man, that is, you know, Rab Broker ran after this man, he wanted to find out, what was the special zchus, in other words, what was the special merit that he had, that Eliyahu assured him that this is a man, you know, who's going to go to Elam Haba. Okay? By the way, Rashi simply says that black shoes, he says, Shaloi kemin hag hayahudim. Apparently, Jews in those days did not wear black shoes. They wore shoes, let's say that, white shoes or something, but they didn't wear black shoes, okay?
Ruby slippers, huh?
Whatever, all right. So he said to him, Ayuda, what do you do? What is it? So Omalei, so he said to him, Zil Hoid, no? Betolomocha. Did I skip something? No.
No. But where is the part where Eliyahu says to him that this man will go to the Olam Haba?
Pardon me?
Where is the part where he says that?
He said to him, is there anybody over here, right? Ikaba HaShuka, is there somebody in this market, right?
Said no.
In this marketplace? Bar Almadosi, who is destined to the world to come, right? So Amalei Loi, right? He said to him, no. All right. Right. So in the meantime, I'm repeating again, right? And because I want to understand word for word what's going on. Chozalahu Gabro, he saw this man.
He, meaning Elijah.
Right, not Elijah. I mean, he asked Elijah. Said at this moment, first Elijah said there isn't any. But while they were talking, right, he saw this man, the Havasayim Asani Uchma, who was wearing black shoes.
Who saw this man?
Rab Broka.
Okay.
Well, either Rab Broka or Eliyahu, it doesn't matter. Eliyahu.
No, I mean Eliyahu knew. Eliyahu certainly was able to spot him. Yeah. But it's Rab Broka, you know, who's wondering, what's for our manage? What type of person is assured that he has Elam Haba? When he's not even dressed like a Jew, right? He's wearing black shoes, as Rashi said. Shalom kemin haka Yehudim. Veloy Rame Chuta, that chelta begulimayin, he's not wearing tzitzis on his garment. So Amalei, so Eliyahu said to him, you see, you have to understand who is doing it. I mean, I'll apply.
I thought he was asking Eliyahu, is this man going to,
So Amalei, right, so he said unto him, in other words, Eliyahu said to him, Hai bar alno do'asidhu,
right?
He is a man who is destined for Elam Haba.
All right.
So Rohat Basrei, so a broker ran after this man. And he wanted to know what his, you know, the special merit that he has. And Omalei said to him, Ayuhuda, what do you do? So Omalei, so he said to him, Zil Hoida, he says, go now, but Tolomocha and come back tomorrow. In other words, I'm not prepared to give you an answer right now. Okay? And why is he not prepared to give an answer right now? Now, the answer is probably, I mean, the Rashi doesn't indicate why. But I have to assume that the reason is that he felt he had to get back to his job, and so he had no time, you know, to bandy words. All right. So, Lemocha, the following day, obviously he came again, right? So, Omalei, Mayudok, he said to him, what do you do? So, Omalei, he says, Zundukne ano, or Zanduka ano, according to the Oruch, all right? At any rate, it's a word that's not a very common word, but from the context we understand what it means. What it means is that he is Shomer Beis Vasurin. In other words, he's a prison warden. Okay? As Rashi explains the word, okay? He's a prison warden. So he says, I'm a prison warden. And I separate the prisoners, men separately and women separately. Not only that, but and I also place my bed between these and these. In other words, between the men and the women. That's where I put my bed. In order that they should not come to commit something which is prohibited. In other words, you know, that they shouldn't carry on any monkey business. So, Ki Chazinu Bas Yisrael, the Yahweh Nochem Aloi Nahu, when I see a Jewish woman that the Goyim, Nochem, right, are literally giving their eyes on her, in other words, they're, you know, giving her the eye because obviously what is it that they want to do? They want to rape her, right, violate her. So, Masana Nafshai, then I risk my life, Umatzil Nolok. And I save her from, you know, the would-be rapist. Yom Echad, one day...
I'm sorry, I don't understand. Is this the prisoners he's saving him from, or just in general, whenever he sees...
it's a good question.
...in the shuk and he sees...
This is the prisoners.
I think it's the prisoners.
He's a prison guard.
Right. So he's could be the other prison guards because Rashi takes it. Take a look. You say the Avi Nochem Enoyolo. It says Bale Beis Vasum. In other words, those people who are in the prison. And maybe it doesn't mean just some prisoners. Maybe it means that there are some others too. You know, who you know, they're looking for easy prey. All right. At any rate, he risks his life and he saves them. Okay. Yom Echad, one day he says Havas Darim Raso Gabon. There was an engaged maiden with us, and the Yahweh born Nochem and Ahu, and the Goyim, you know, they were giving her the eye, obviously, what they wanted to do. So he says, Shaklei Dur. He says, Durdaya de Chamra. Now, Chamra, of course, means wife. The question is, what is Durdaya de Chamra? So Rashi explains, Durdaya de Chamra, he says, it's Shmorim Shelyai. In other words, the lees of the wine, Dumim Kedam, says Rashi, which are blood red, right? So I take this, the Shaddai La Bishipula, and I threw it down at the lower part of her garment. Okay?
Make it look like she was
menstruated. Make it look exactly.
Like she was menstruated.
Right. The Amre, and they said, Distanohi, she is menstruant, right? And therefore they, you know, they didn't bother.
Lees or what? What is the lees?
The schmutz that you have, the dregs, right? The dregs and the wine. That's what the lees are.
Okay.
Yeah. Omalei, so he said to him, "My tamalei slach lechuti." Right? Tell me. So why is it that you don't have tzitzis? The ramis besanuch me, and why are you wearing black shoes? So Omalei, so he said to him, "Ayalna benapikna benina." Says, I always come and go among goyim. By not being dressed like a Jew, instead of dressing like a goy, so, you know, I'm able to go among them. So that they do not know that I am a Jew. And if they, in other words, you know, the goyim, the Romans, make a decree, then modana lahu the rabbonim. I immediately make it known to the rabbis, vorachme, and they pray, and they are able to annul their decree. All right. So, in other words, by being able to pass as a goy, I find out what are they up to, and I immediately inform the rabbis, and then through their prayers and their intercession, they are able to.
Like
a Jewish spy. Right. So, my tamor loch, ano, my udok, the amrat li zil hoidun salam. Now he asks the next question. He says, tell me, what is the reason that when I said to you, right, what kind of work do you do? And you said it to me, go now and come back tomorrow. So, amalei, so he said to him, at that very moment, Gazwei Gezerto, they passed an evil decree, the Aminu Bereisho, and I had it on my mind, Ezel the Eshma Lehul Rabbonin, that I would go and I would, you know, make it known to the rabbis, Dilevoi Rachme Allah, the Milsa, right? So that they could, you know, pray in order to avert this evil thing. At Hochi the Hochi, so in the meantime, also Hanoch Trei. All right. So anyway, this is like episode number one. Okay. Episode number one is the story about the jailer, the Jewish jailer, and so now we know why was he wearing black shoes.
You can go along. Go
ahead. Okay. And why was he not wearing them? So and so. Of course, the answer is for that reason. Okay. All right. But in the meantime, he's able to save the Jews, you know, through finding out the plans and so on. All right. So this is his claim to Olam Haba. Okay. Now, Hochi v'Hochi. In the meantime, well, Rabbi Broca and Eliyahu, you know, were busy again conversing. So also Hanach Chay. So two guys came. Now the next word Osi would imply, you know, came. But if you notice, there's a side note over there which says not Osi but Achai. In other words, two brothers came. Okay. So Omalei Hanach Name b'nei Alma de Osi Ninhu. So Eliyahu said to Rabbi Broca, he says, you know, these two people are also destined to go to the world to come. Ozel Gabayhu. So again, Rabbi Broca went up to them. Omalahu, he said to them, my Uvdaihu, tell me, what do you do? So Omalayinshe Biduchanan. So they said to him, we are merrymakers. Mavichinanatsive. You know, we make those who are sad, atzive, happy. Inami also ki chazinin beitre the islahu tigra bahadaihu. When we see that there are two people who are quarrelling with each other, tarchinon the avdinin luhu shloma, we make an effort and we try to make peace between them. So this is the reason why they have their share in the Olam Haba. Very, very nice.
Kind of a famous story, isn't it?
Yeah, about the people, the merrymakers, right, that they make people happy. It's told in different versions, but, I mean, this is the basic source of the story, and very, very important. What we can do to make other people happy and bring peace between other people.
That's a very good question.
It helps us to get a claim on the Olam Haba.
And it's hard enough for me to wear black shoes.
Another rabbi. Now, getting back to the Mishnah again, remember the Mishnah has a whole series of things when it says Masriim, right? We have to shrive. We have to shrive. We have to pray. We have to blow shofar and so on and so forth. So, Tana Rabbanan, our sages taught, Alelu Masriim Bechol Mokeh. Wherever it may be, they do it. Al Hashidofon, the Al Hayevokon, in other words, for what they call blast and mildew, in other words, for drought and mildew, right? The Al Arbev Achosil, and upon all different types of locusts, or if you wish, locusts and grasshoppers, if you're looking, you know, for words which are slightly synonymous, okay? The Al Chayaroa, and also for evil beasts. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says, Al Hashidofon, the Yal HaYakom B'chol Shehu. He says, if there is either drought or mildew, then even the slightest amount, you have to begin. Arbe V'chosil, and in the case of, grasshoppers and locusts, he says, Afilo lo nira b'Eretz Yisrael, el kanaf echot. If in Eretz Yisrael you see only even a wing, Masri and Alehen, it's already time. In other words, even just the wing of a locust is enough that we have to begin to sound the alarm for the people in Eretz Israel. Then we just said that the Al Chayaroa, right, that if evil beasts attack. So Tana Rabbanan, so the Gemara now explains, Chayaroa She'amru, this evil beast that they're talking about is Bizman Shehi Mishulachas Masri Noleho, but Eina Mishulachas and Masri Noleho. Now, Mishulach or Mishulachas over here, we have to translate sort of in the way that it means that, as Rashi says, Vidashamayim. In other words, the plague, that is, the animal has been let loose, you know, from heaven, he says. In other words, the animal is going on a rampage. I think, frankly, all it means is to be let loose in the sense that there's nothing, you know, to hold it back or something like that. Okay? At any rate, if you see an animal and, you know, it's like ready to go on a rampage, this is the idea. It's ready to go on a rampage. Okay? But if it doesn't seem that it's going on a rampage, then they're not. All right, so they want to know. All right, so if that's the case, give me a definition. What do we mean by mishulachas? In other words, it's been let loose. And what do we mean by an animal that has not been let loose? Yeah, we'll give Jerry a moment to sit down. We're on Chof Beis Amid Aleph. Okay. Oh, you missed some good stories, Jerry. You missed some very good stories. Yeah. We'll find out, you know, some of the things that help us get to Olam Haba. Alright, so how do we define Mishulachas and how do we define Sheinu Mishulachas? An animal which has been let loose and one which hasn't. So he says, Nireis Bo'ir, if the animal appears in the city, then Mishulachas. We know that it's there. I mean, if you normally don't find animals running around loose in the city, so in that case, we know then that this is talking about a calamity.
Right. In Julius Caesar, the lion is in the city, so that's an omen.
Right. But Basoda, if the animal is in the field, then Eidem Mishalachas. Then, I mean, this would be a normal place to find the animal, and therefore, that doesn't mean you know that it's necessarily on a rampage. Okay? Mm-hmm. Bayom, if we see the animal wandering around during the day, then it's mishulachas, because this is not the normal thing. Usually when do animals go for prey?
At night.
So therefore, if you see it during the day, then you know it's mishulachas. It's been
translating it as a visitation.
On the loose, okay? Balayla, visitation. Yeah, right. So looking for a nice word.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
Balayla, but if the animal is wandering around at night, then ain't a mishulachas. Roasoshnei b'nei odom, roasosacharehen, if it sees there are two people and it runs after them, then we say mishulachas. But nechbeis b'ptehem, what if it hides or runs away from them? That particular, or is it the rush that actually says barchom b'ptehem, okay? Nachbeis means that it hides from them. In other words, as soon as it sees it, it runs away. It hides, right? So in that case, we know ein mishulachas. These animals are not out, you know, for prey. Okay? But torfo shnei b'nei yodam yochle echod mehem. What if it attacked two people and it ate up one of them? Then mishulachas. There's no question. It's a dangerous animal. Ochlo shnehem. What if it ate them both? Now this one I haven't quite figured out yet.
Well, it was just hungry.
Well, this is what Rashi says. He says the animal was so hungry that it ate up two people, whereas the other one would imply that it ate one, its hunger was appeased, and yet it attacked somebody. That's why the other one was mishulachas. Whereas in the case of an ate up two people, it's because the animal is never hungry, it's starving. Okay, so that's
really reaching.
So it's not ate up mishalach.
Excuse me, if the animal only ate one person, isn't it
the
Gemara state that it's a visitation?
Yes. Yeah, we're talking about that.
If it killed two people and ate only one, it's a visitation?
Yeah, because
right.
You have to say that,
because it attacked the second one in spite of the fact that it wasn't hungry anymore.
No, but
that's
the
idea. Well, that's already a different story, all right. Yeah, I mean, there's a medrash that says, you know, that, look, the Rebbeinu Sholem has all kinds of different ways of bringing death, for example, to a person who has committed murder, but you don't have witnesses or something like that. So, Rebbeinu Sholem will take care of him already. He has common dubim, for instance, he has bears, he has lions and things like that, snakes, you know, that can attack such a person as a punishment for their sins, okay?
Okay.
All right. Also, the gag. What happens if the animal climbs up on the roof, the notlo tinok me'ariso, and it seizes a child out of its crib? Then, in that case, mishulachas. No question. It's a dangerous animal, right? Okay. So now they say, oh, gufa kasha. Says, wait a minute. There's a kasha about this. This is like a contradiction. First of all, what is the contradiction? Amrit, you said, Nira Soba Yir Mishulachas. If it appears in the city, then we say that it is, what is that fancy word you
visitation.
Use?
Visitation.
Visitation. And not only that, but it doesn't qualify it any further. As he says over here, Leishno, and there's no distinction made by Yom, Leishno, Balayla, whether it happened during the day, right, or if it happened at night. And then afterwards you said, Bayom, if it happens during the day, Mishalachas, and Balayla, Eino Mishalachas, right? Whereas if it happens at night, then it's not a visitation. So, there's a contradiction. So he says, Lo Kasha, nah, no contradiction. It's all right, we can straighten it
no
out.
No question.
Right. Hochikoma, this is what he means to say. Nirasor Bo'ir Bayom. If the animal appeared in the city during the day, right, then it's mishalachas. It's a visitation. But ba'ir ba'layla, if it appears in the city at night, ain't no mishalachas. It's not. I don't know why it's not at night, but I guess I have to say that because of the fact that, where are people? People are in their bed and so on and so forth, so it's not liable to create, the same danger as it would be during the day when people are out in the street and active and so on, okay?
Well,
because that's what makes sense to me. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking, in many of the stories they have, are stories about Yerushalayim, jackals howling. Which is at night. It's always at night.
Yeah, but I have to tell you what I mean. What you're referring to is a sign of the destruction of Yerushalayim.
Well, even in modern stories, they have describe Jerusalem and have
jackals wailing at night.
Yeah, okay.
All right. It's really based, upon
a
pasuk that we have at the end of Eicha, where it says Al Hatzion Sheshomeg, upon Mount Zion, which has been laid waste, Shualim Hilkubo, right? So the foxes run around over there and so on. Yeah. So that's the idea. In other words, it's a sign of destruction. That you see that happening. Okay. Howling of jackals, of foxes running around, things like that.
Rabbi Akiva,
correct. It's a famous Gemara at the end of Maseches Makos. No, the end of Tainus will come to it.
Mm-hmm. It's been mentioned already. I think we've
mentioned
it already.
No, we haven't heard of this yet. No.
But one could say that. It's natural to hear.
Yeah, it's the end of Gemara Marcus. Yeah. Yes, sorry.
No. What we've said before, if one could say that, using this example and others, that it's natural even for city dwellers to have animals surround them at night. But yet, if the same animals appeared in their neighborhoods during the day, they would see it as. An invasion, so to speak.
All right. I still think that, from my point of view, I think it makes a little bit more sense to say that people are in their homes. They're not out in the street. So that, therefore, if it comes into the city during the night, it's not a visitation. In other words, it doesn't present the same danger.
My uncle lived in Europe and said,
all right, well, he was out in the country. That's a different story. He wasn't in the city then.
He wasn't a very populated area.
All right, anyway, to continue over here. So Idami says, or another possibility, but Sode, in the field, if the animal shows up, Apilo Bayom, even if it is during the day, then in that case, you can see that the wording over here is very difficult because they're putting in brackets here, brackets there, and you don't know. Should you say Idami Basode, right? In the field, during the day, Mishulachas, right? Whereas Basoda Balaila in the Mishulachas. This is apparently the way we should read it, because these, you know, the text over here is a little bit not clear. All right. So the implication would be then that if it's in the field, even during the day, it's Mishulachas. Well, I don't know. It's Mishulachas, because then it says, but if it's at night in the field, then it's not, because that's the normal place for it to go foraging for food. You understand? In other words, the implication is that the animal normally is not going to show up during the day, and if you see it, then it represents danger.
What is the difference between it being in the field or in the city?
In the city, right.
No, I mean the same.
But an animal, you'd expect an animal to be in the field.
Right, animals usually expect them in the field, exactly.
Yeah, but if you see him during the day.
Yeah.
Even during the day, you see him.
Yeah,
see,
but then they say
the
it's Mishalachas, right?
Okay, good. Let's take a look at the Rashi, and we'll see that Rashi appears. Rashi is in agreement with your second opinion. All right.
And also, what Herb said, because up above it says
Bayom Shuvachat.
Right.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. All right. But as you can see, with all these, you know, put words in brackets, it doesn't make too much sense. So obviously, the text that we have over here is not 100%
clear.
In order. Okay. So Rashi too struggled with the same problem. So let's take a look where it says Hochi Komar over there in Rashi.
Yeah.
You see how he comes?
Yeah.
He says, this is what it means, right? He says, Hi, the Katoni Nuras of the ear. Where we learned, you know, that if the animal appeared in the city, so Hochi Kamar, this is what it means. Nirasoba ear. Let's say the animal was seen in the city, right? Kigon Shinirasoba Yom. As, for example, it appeared during the day. The stam niraso bayom mashman, because in general, what does it mean niraso? It appeared. When can you see it? You know, niraso is really the nipal, right? It's the passive of the word to see. So, in other words, if it is seen, you know, it has to mean during the day. Okay, abol balaylo, but if the animal, you know, shows up at night, ena mishalachas, this is more normal. Okay, the high de katone and where we have learned Nirasa Bayom, that if the animal appeared during the day, so this is what Rashi says now. Asodekai says we are referring to the fact that it appears during, you know, the day in the field, right? The im Nirasa Basedo Bayom, that if it appears in the field during the day, then Eino Mishulachas. And we say it is not a visitation, because this is
normal.
It's normal. It's not threatening. All right. And now about the next part, where it says that if it saw two people and ran after them, so we said Mishalachas, right? Then it's a visitation. So now the question is, but what if it's just standing still, the animal, not running after them? So we have to say what? Ain't no Mishalachas, right? It's not a visitation. It's not, you know, a dangerous situation. Bahodor, and then after that you said, Amrit, Bahodor Amrit, and then afterwards you said, Nachbeis Mipdehen, if it concealed itself when it saw the two people, in other words, it was afraid of them, so Eidem Mishalachas. Not a problem. Ha, Oimedes, but what if it just stands still, Mishalachas? Is it, you know,
a visitation,
because a moment ago we said that if it runs after them, it is, right? But what if it just stands still? It sees them, and yet it stands still. And so he says, no kasha. He says, no, it's not difficult. Let's iron out this problem. He says, kan basode hasmukhala agam. We're talking in one case of about, if you see it in a field, which is right near an agam. Agam is literally, it's like a pond of water. And in the pond of water, also, you know, you have reeds growing over there, so that the animal can conceal itself over there. Okay? So in that case, what? So as Rashi explains, in that case we have to say, Omda, if it just stands still, ain't a mishalachas. Then it's not a problem. Why? The cave, and I'm reading the Rashi right now. You see, Basoda Hatzmukhala Agam over there. Yeah. He says, then omda inu mishalachas, if it just stands still, then we say it's not a mishalachas. The cave in the smucha lagam, because if it's right near the pond, then hainu revisa. Then this is the normal place, you know, where it likes to hang out. Okay? Velo borcha. And it didn't flee. Sovra, because the animal is, you know, thinks, I osi basrai, arikto lagamiyat. If those guys are going to follow me, if they come after me, then I'll immediately escape into the pond area. Okay? But what if it is Khan Besoda Shainos Mukhalagam, if it's in a field which is not near? So let's continue with the Rashi. Besoda Shainos Mukhalagam says Omda, and it just stands still. Then in that case, Mishulachas, and this could be a dangerous animal. The Kavan, the Lav Mokim Ravisahu, because since this is not the normal place where it, you know, likes to hang out, the Kaimo, and it's standing, Salvadi Mishulachas. And you know that this is a dangerous animal, Gezerahi, because, you know, the Rebbeinu Shalalem says, go out and do some bad things, you see, okay? Torfor Shleim B'nei Yodom Ki Echod, what if it, attacked two, literally it tore them to pieces, right? Mm-hmm. Two human beings at the same time, Ki Echod means, right? Same time. V'yochlo Echod Mehem, and it ate one of them, we say mishulachas. Whereas shenehem ain't a mishulachas. Whereas if it ate both of them, then it's not a visitation. Mm-hmm. As we explained before, as Rashi explained, right? The ho amrit, but didn't you say afilo rasasod, that even if it ran after them, some rapapot. So rapapot say, kitoni ahi ba'akma. We're talking there about, if it has a nearby place, you know, to conceal itself right near the reeds, the pool, you know, the pond with the reeds, then in that case, it's eino mishalachas. But if it doesn't have that, then you can certainly imagine that it is a dangerous situation. Then, gufa, let's get back again to the last thing that we said. Also lagag, that if the animal climbed up on the roof, right, the notlo tinoik me'arisa, and it sees a child from the cradle, mishulachas, it's dangerous. So he says, pshita. Isn't that obvious? If you do something like that? Some Rabbi Papa said, kechuchi zetayede. We're talking over here about a different situation. What is it? So he says, kechucha means that it's a cave in which it's a little the witch hunters a hunt
the blind. Let's,
the blind, if you wish. Okay, let's go back again to the Rashi. All right, first of all, the fifth line from the bottom, agam, how do we translate that? So Rashi gives you a French word, it looks like marshik over there. But in reality, the modern French word for swamp area is marais. But that's because, the S in French, which we have, has become silent. In Rashi's time, S's were sounded. So this is marais, okay? Of course, the words change in their form too, you see. But that's what it is. And it says, yes.
I'm a little confused about wild animal near the lake. Why is an animal that's standing near a lake considered not dangerous?
Because we say if it doesn't attack the human beings, it knows that it can run back into its pond over there, where the reeds grow, in case they give it the evil eye or something, they look at it,
Then why?
So therefore it's not dangerous. In other words, it's not out for prey.
Okay.
It figures that it could escape in case, they look threatening to it. Okay?
Then why, if the same animal is in a field, is it considered dangerous?
Because the animal in that particular case does not have its familiar place of safety.
Right.
And so therefore, if it feels that it's going to be threatened,
Right.
then it's going to attack. Okay?
Thank you.
Yeah. So he says, this marsh is Hasamach Le'ir, it's near the city. The Humole Kaisim, it's full of We said reeds. He says it's full of thorns. Okay, but at any rate, you know, it's the point is that the animal can conceal itself up there.
Did Mare also work for seed?
What?
French word,
Mare, seed. Oh, I see. No, that's in French. It's mer, M-E-R. Mare is the Latin word for sea. Okay, like the Romans called the Mediterranean, they called it Mare Nostrum. This is our sea. Okay. But in French, the word became mer. Of course, in Spanish, it still remains mar. Okay? Like del mar or something like that. Right? Vista del mar.
Yeah.
View of the ocean, literally. Okay? Ocean view. All right. Now, getting back to over here, Kitanya he did ochla in Rasaso. So again, right, he's still talking about the animal. He says, where we learned over there, he says the ochla where it ate, right? Excuse me, if it ate, right? Ain.
Are we in Rashi?
Right. The ochla, he says, that it's not ain, but in. In means yes. In other words, if it eats a human being, then yes, it is dangerous, but ratsasa, lo. But if it runs away, right, then in that particular case, it's no. So he says, ba'agam, this is, you know, it runs to the reeds over there. The kevan, the haine duchta, som chadato v'rohata abashayu. Because inasmuch as it knows that this place is nearby, it feels confident and runs after them. As we can see, there's a little bit of confusion on the whole thing. Even Rashi is not 100% sure exactly how to interpret this. But he's trying to get into the psychology of the animal.
Wait, did Rashi say the same thing as you said? That I'm not sure I follow. Does Rashi also say that near the marsh, the animal feels protected and will
right.
run away?
And if it feels like running after them, so it's because it knows that, let's say, they look threatening to it, so it can run back again to its hiding place. You understand? So,
but it also will run towards them?
It might run towards them, yes. But the question is, what is it doing? Right? Because it says, the Hamrat Apilu Ratsasa, right? Even if it ran after them, he said it's Eino Mishalachas, right? Go back a couple of lines in the Gemara.
Oh, okay.
See the fifth line over there? It says, if it ate one of them, right, Mishalachas, but Shnehem Eino Mishalachas, right?
Oh.
But both, if it ate both of them, then it's not Mishalachas, and it's not a visitation. The Hamrat, he says, but didn't you say, Apilu Ratsasa, even if it ran after them?
Right.
That it should be, right? So this is what they explain. You know, if it has a nearby place, then in that case it's not a visitation, because the animal, if it feels threatened, can still come back. Whereas in the field, if it feels threatened, it's going to want to attack. Okay?
Right.
All right. Now what about the child, you know, and then we said it was Kechucha Ditzayde. So he explains, Kuch Koten Shel Tzayodin, Sheyachkaru Lamara V'Opos. He says, this is like a little cave that hunters hollow out, they dig out in order to lie in wait for fowl. Okay? In other words, you know, to catch fowl. The Yafal Gav, the Lab Binyon Kabuahu, and even though this is not, you know, a normal type of a building, says Rashi, right? Below Hava Ki Yishuv, and it's not like, you know, a place which has been settled. So Havya Mishalachas. Nevertheless, this represents Mishalachas, represents a danger. So even in such a place, it is. All right. At any rate, we see, if you see an animal, it's dangerous. No, don't stand and wait for an invitation.
Lesson learned.
Right. All right. Then, if you remember, the Mishnah says that al hacherev, if there is literally sword, in other words, if there is war, right? So in that case, you have to also shy in order to try to avert the calamity. So Tanu Rabbonon, so he explains it again. He's giving a definition. He says, Tanu Rabbonon, Cherev she'omru, when they said, you know, Cherev, which in this case let's translate it maybe, let's say an army might be a better translation, okay? If you see an army, Einu tzorech lomar chev shenu shel shalom. We certainly don't have to define this as an army which is there for warlike purposes, literally, you know, for not for peaceful purposes. Obviously, if you know that there's an army on its way, or you see, you know, troops there that are hostile, there's no question, I mean, that you have to pray to the Ribbono shel Olam. Elo, but this is the other thing. Afilu cherev shel shalom, even if you see an army which is an army for peace, peaceful army, in other words, they're not attacking actively, nevertheless you should also be wary of them and pray. Why? She'ein lecho cherev shel shalom, because you did not have, we find in the Bible a story about an army which had no warlike desires, in other words, it had peaceful desires, more so than Nipparanecho. Nipparanecho was a king of Egypt, okay? And he was out to make war against the Assyrians, Asher, okay? Yoshiyahu, who was the king of Judah, you know, the kingdom of Judah stood between Egypt and between the forces of Asher, okay? So, as a matter of fact, the battle was fought, you know, actually upon Jewish soil. Okay? But at any rate, the Paranecho wanted to take his armies and pass through Yehuda, pass through the kingdom of Judah, okay? On his way in order to meet the forces of Asher and fight with them. So, what happened? Yoshiyahu sent his army, sent the Jewish army, in order to prevent Paranecho from passing through the land. Now, Paranecho comes to Yoshiyahu and he says, my intentions are peaceful. In other words, I don't have designs against you, but I have designs against Asher. Okay? So this is the situation. The Afal Pichain, and nevertheless, Nishalba Melech Yoshiyahu. Even though here was an army that was there for, you know, supposedly for peaceful purposes, right? Nevertheless, King Yoshiyahu literally stumbled. In other words, he made a mistake, and, you know, it proved to be a dangerous situation. Shenemar, and now they quote a little bit from the story that we find. It's written over there in the Book of Kings, or actually there's another version in the Book of Chronicles. This happens to be the quotation from the Book of Chronicles, from Divrei HaYomim. It's written by Yishlach Elov Malochim Lemor. So Paranecho sent messages saying to him, Maliv Aloch Melech Yehuda, what business do you have with me, O King of Judah? Lo Alecha Osa Hayom, I haven't come today, he says, in order to fight with you. Ki El Beis Milchamto, but rather I want to fight, you know, with the nation with whom I'm waging war. Velohim Omar, and God said unto me, Levahaleni, that I should make haste, literally, over here, okay? Chadalechoa, may Elohim Asher Emi, beware, literally, stop, right? Cease, stop, beware of God who is with me. Ve'yad yashchisecha, so that he will not destroy you. So first of all, the question is, what do they mean by Elohim, by God? My Elohim, that's the question. Who is the God that he's referring to? You know, God with me. So Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Rav. So Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, as he said, this is Zu Avodah Zarah. He says, this is the idolatrous God that he's talking about. Omar. And therefore, what did Yoshiyahu say? King Yoshiyahu said to himself, Hoil the Kod Botach Avodah Zarah. Inasmuch as he put his faith in idolatry, so Yachin Lele, I will be able to overcome him. And then what happened? Vayoru Hayorim the Melech Yoshiyahu. And the archers shot at King Yoshiyahu. Vayomer Hamelech La'avodov, and the king said to his servants, Heviruni Ki'achalesi, that is, the king Yoshiyahu said to his servants, take me away from the field of battle because I am wounded, you know, sorely wounded, okay? So he said, Ki'achalesi miyod, because I'm very wounded. In other words, I feel, you know, that my life is on its way out. My Ki'achalesi meod. So now they say, what is the meaning of Ki'achalesi miyod? You know, that I'm sorely wounded. Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Rav, it teaches us, he says, Malameid, She'osu kol gufe kifvora, that the archers made his body, that is the body of Yoshiyahu, like a sieve. In other words, they shot so many
arrows
into him, right, that it was just full of holes all over his body, holes from the arrows. Omer Rav Shmuel ben Nachmeni, Omer Rav Yonason. So Rav Shmuel ben Nachmeni said to him, Rav Yonason, he said, Bipnei ma'ne'edash Yoshiyahu, why was Yoshiyahu punished? You have to remember, Yoshiyahu was considered the best of all the various kings of Yehuda from the time of Solomon on, you know, right till the destruction, because we read about how, you know, he found the Sefer Torah, and how he proclaimed the fast, and he told everybody to do tshuva, and then he reinstituted the practice of Pesach, which had fallen into disuse. People were not, you know, celebrating Yom Tov and so on. So all these are wonderful things that he did. And nevertheless, why did he have to suffer such a terrible punishment? So he says, "Bipnei shoyelo limolech v'yemiho." The reason is because the king should have consulted with Yirmiyahu, should have consulted with the prophet Yirmiyahu, instead of acting on his own, you know, and defying Paranecho, and saying, you know, I can beat this man, this army. He should have consulted first with Yirmiyahu and find out whether what he was doing was the right thing. Velo nimlach, and he did not consult with him. My dorash. So the Gemara wants to know, what was the reasoning of Yoshiyahu? My dorash. What? How did he interpret the text of the Torah? Okay. So the pasuk says, happens to be in Vayikra. It says, "V'cherev lo savo bi'artzachem." Sword will not pass through your land. In other words, you know, you will not suffer any war in your land, right? So, my cherev, what do we mean by sword? Ilemo cherev sheino shel shalom. If we say, you know, an army which is hostile, so v'hoksiv, it's written, "Menasati shalom v'oretz." Pasuk says, "Menasati shalom v'oretz," so that will bring peace to the land, right? So, elo apilu shel shalom, even an army which is there for peaceful purposes, also will not what? God will not permit this army to go through your land. But who eino yodea, but what the king did not realize was she'ein doro doma yofa, that his generation was not that worthy. Ki hava nichan avshe, as he was dying, choza yemiyohu, so Jeremiah saw that his lips were like whispering, right, were moving. So Omar, he said, Shema chas v'shalom milsa, says, maybe the king did something, you know, that he did something that was not worthy. So Omar agav sare gochin. So he said that because of his pain, gochin, he bent over v'shamei dekor matzik alei dina. But what did he hear Yoshiyahu saying? You know, he thought, in other words, that maybe Yoshiyahu was saying in his dying moments, let's say he was complaining against the Beit Hashalel or something like that. This is what they mean, you know, that milsad lo mahagdan, that he was saying something which is not worthy. Okay? So Omar, he said, you know, I got sorry because of his pain. So Gochin, as a result, Yemiyohu bent over, Vishomi dekol matzik alei dinam. And he heard that Yoshiyahu was defending God's justice, in the judgment that he had visited upon him. Omar, and he said, Tzadik Hu Hashem, Lord is righteousness, the pasuk again from Eichon, Ki Fihu Morisi, because I have rebelled against this word. Posach Aleha Ishato, so that very moment, Yirmiyahu, don't forget, Yirmiyahu is the author of the book of Eicha. So at that point, he recited the verse concerning him. We find that in the last, towards the end of Eicha, it's written, Ruach HaPeinu Mashiach Hashem. The breath of our nostrils is the anointed of God. In other words, God's own anointed is actually, the king, okay? And of course, Nilka Bishvisasam, the rest of the pasuk says he has been trapped, and, so the Yirmiyahu is wailing, over the king, who is, after all, Mashiach Hashem, anointed by God. Don't forget that all the various kings, maybe David could be persuaded to stay a moment, so we'll say a Kaddish.
We got 10?
Yeah. Yeah, if David stays for a moment, we'll have a minion stay college.
The place where we can stop?
Yeah, we'll stop over here. I just wanted to say, we talk about Mashiach all the time. But what is the meaning of Mashiach? Of course, the answer is the anointed. Every Jewish king who was anointed by by the Kohen Gadol was automatically given the title of Mashiach Hashem, the anointed one of God. Now, naturally, who is the anointed one of God par excellence? Of course, that would be King David. So that this is why we speak about Mashiach ben David, that the Messiah to come is a descendant of King David. All right. But over here, the pasuk refers, as I said, to the king of Judah, and, it's his keynote, this is his elegy that he gave for King Yoshio.
All right,
okay, so
we'll stop.
Stop at this point.
It's
We're in the middle of Chof
Beis,
Amud Beis.
All right, and it's November 9th, 1994.
Right. So, Mr. Shem, next week we'll meet again at the same time at 7:30 and continue. Okay, to continue. As we know that we're...